Hey, everybody, right here, right now, we're broadcasting from Toronto, home of the Blue Jays, Raptors, Maple Leafs, and Canadian psychic Robert Lindsay Milne, and that's me. Welcome to my side of the crystal ball. We've got an amazing show tonight, just as we do every show, each one getting better, each one getting more refined, and each one being clearer. So tonight, we're following in those footsteps. My two guests, one in the expert's chair and the other, the main event, are so fascinating tonight, I have decided to forego WWRS only for this episode. I would like to hear, and I would like you to hear, all that these fabulous guests have to say. My first guest, Catherine O'Shea, animal communicator, intuitive, and channeler. She communicates, talks to, relates with animals on all levels. What a fabulous, exciting, wonderful person she is, and she's going to be talking all about that. And then in the main event, my guest, Lindsay Sharman. And Lindsay is a mystic, a teacher, and spiritual healer. She also is the host of Rogue Ways podcast and also Middle Pathway. Lindsay has been a teacher all her life, first a teacher as a school teacher, teaching in rural, teaching in urban, teaching in other countries, teaching in the United States. And when she became and found her enlightenment, she then started teaching spiritual things as well as many others. And Lindsay will be talking with us. Before we bring our first guest out, I have a request. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like and comment leave a comment. They're so important. Comments get us higher up in the ratings, and then we get better viewers, and then we can do more shows. So comment, and then subscribe to our channel. And this way you'll always find us when we have a new episode. And if you subscribe, please remember, it's complimentary as well. You can find us on Spotify and Apple and pretty much anywhere else you get your podcasts. Now, I'm still doing readings and connecting and life coaching. And if you want to find me personally, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Yep, I said it, TikTok, and YouTube. And of course, always on my website, www.robertlindsaymilne.com. And now, without further ado, let us begin the expert's chair. Catherine O'Shea, animal communicator extraordinaire, welcome to my side of the crystal ball.
Thank you so much, Robert.
When I saw you talking on Lindsay's show, a couple of weeks ago, I just had to have you on my show. And what I loved about your presence on that show is how much you love doing what you're doing. And please never lose that. Take good care of yourself and your, I feel like I'm preaching to you, but never lose that love.
I must need to hear it.
Yeah. So it's something very special and very beautiful. And that is what drew me to you, the love of what you're doing. So congratulations on that. So do animals talk?
You're asking me. I would say yes.
Okay. So how do they talk? So do they talk to you? Do all animals speak the same language? So do they all speak English when do you hear their voice? What do you hear?
So the way that I'm connecting to them mm-hmm. is on the level of soul, right? It's like this connection that we can't maybe see, or some of us can, or hear or feel all the time. So it's on that what I'm really connecting to is their quantum field of information and
Okay.
message and their spirit, and I consider all of that soul. Sometimes I hear them, but it's in a different way than I'm hearing you now. I think everybody kind of spiritually hears different in their channels. Sometimes I see the words,
Like printed out?
like I can see them
Oh,
in my
wow.
spiritual eye. Sometimes they give me a knowing. You know that when you just know something and
Absolutely.
you don't know how or why. Just the knowing, like lots of that happens often when I meet them. This is a way that they confirm is they give me their age, or sometimes it's not exactly their age, but how long they've been with the person they're with, or
Oh,
how they
yeah.
were when they got them, or something like that. And then they also show me images through my spiritual eye, kind of like a movie. Like what they like to show me a lot is places or objects that they're attached to, like blankets and certain toys. And sometimes I'll see how they, if they're a pet who's transitioned into the soul world, is no longer physically here, they'll show me different things about that as well.
How do you do that? So you do that for people's animals and animals in general, is that correct?
Yeah, I do now. I'm fully dedicated myself to doing this now.
Well, congratulations. So when people want your help in talking with their animals or their pets, how do you make the connection
So
with
how
the
I connect
animals?
is
Yes,
using my spiritual channels. I've always had this connection to animals, and I more when I was little, I felt like it was an intuitive, like just more of a knowing, right? What they
okay.
were communicating to me and how. Now what I do is I'll go into that connection of the heart and soul. And our animals are so good at showing us this connection happens because we feel so
Oh,
connected
sure.
to them, but they're not
Wonderful.
like talking like we're talking,
Right, of course.
right? So it's this connection, and I connect to them on the level of the soul, and I call them to offer their message, and to lots of times they use my voice and share their message, or they show me or how we just described. And I kind of do a little silent, my own way of connecting and activating the communication, and even teaching people how to do soul communication on their end with their animals. So even if they don't know immediately what the response is, how you can talk to them and tell them what you need from them, what you'd like them to do, what is happening, so they can receive that message, not just physically and vibrationally, but also on that deeper level, which is that level of where we're all connected, that level of soul.
What type of things do you sense from the animals when you're connecting with them?
Oh boy, they have so much wisdom.
Do they? Is there oh, is there a difference between the wisdom of a domestic animal and the wisdom of a wild animal?
It just depends on what you connect to. So for me, I think that there's been probably, so I believe in, reincarnation, and I connect to that way. So there is a possibility that your domesticated animal could carry the wisdom of a wild animal if
Okay.
that's what they were, right? At some point on their journey, if they were, and sometimes they show me that. They'll show me a lifetime when they were an elephant or when they were, a different animal. They can carry the wisdom. They can carry infinite wisdom like all of our souls can,
Animals, and we are animals, right? We are animals. Animals reincarnate into other species. So if you're a dog in another life, they can be an elephant or a cougar or a crocodile or and is it a growth upward? Or so like an elephant has some wisdom and intelligence, then there would be a smarter one with a brighter mental state. Do they move upwards ultimately to be human, or is that necess or is that the curse? to me.
Well, there's probably a lot of teachings out there about it, and the stuff, what I connect to and what I've received just through my own connection, there's probably a lot of different takes on it. Is
What's
that
your take? How
my
you
take
Yeah, I
is,
like yours.
and what I what I've received through the teachings I've studied is, every soul's purpose is to serve. This is what I think, to be of some kind of service. Well, when we say that word serve, you might jump into a certain mindset of what that is, but really it's just to be of service, right?
Right.
to bring that connection and that happiness. And our domesticated animals do that in a really powerful way, and we know that the animals who live in the wild also do that. So what I've received is, actually, when you become a domesticated animal, your opportunity to serve is different because you're with a human being, and you just get to spend your whole life being, well, if you end up in a good circumstance, right?
Right? Of course.
You end up being fed. You don't have to find shelter or
right.
hunt for your food.
Right.
You get taken care of, and you get this opportunity to just love unconditionally.
Yes.
So this is a different opportunity, I would say a more enlightened opportunity to serve than it would be if you were in the wild, where you still had to create this, whether it's necessary or not, right? You had to create this karma around killing things and, you know, living in that survival mode and being more instinctual and still offering great service, but your opportunity to serve is very different. So I think that being a human is, you know, we have, our consciousness is different in a way that we can actively create our experience. Our free will is different. We can really serve in really powerful ways, which I think ascends you on your journey. That would be my take on it. So in terms from animal to animal, it just depends, because it depends on the circumstances and where you are. And
so from your perspective, then it's possible either way, either they do evolve through species, or they stay in the same. It can be either one or even more than that.
Yeah, I think it can be. Like my little dog here, I'll show you.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Hi to everybody. He can't hear you. No, he can hear you.
There he is. Mr. Ping, right? Good evening, Mr. Yes. Ping.
This is Mr. Ping, and
hey, Mr. Ping.
He's my little doggy, and and he's done being on camera. But you know, I've done a lot of readings with him and also received some readings. And this is really common with people and their animal companions, by the way, is we have past life relationships together. And he's been a human, actually.
Oh, actually, that was okay. So is that regressing?
The message I got was he made some mistakes. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But he must yes. have done. He must have done some good things, because look where he ended up.
Right, right. Of course. That's it. And maybe, you know, his purpose is to work with you.
It is, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That's interesting.
And he's helped me. He's helped me open up to my service to the animals and communicating with them. And he showed me how practical it can be, and all those kinds of things, and how magical it can be. How effective it can be and how real it is.
So what do people want when they seek you out for help with their animal, their pet? And by the way, working with a snake, is it the same as working with a dog or a cat?
I mean, for me, soul is going to be... Yeah. You're like, yes, for you. I always saying that because I only can speak from my experience, obviously.
Yes.
It's on the soul level. So it's whatever that soul's message, information, purpose.
So you could do it, but you haven't done it with snakes or reptiles or.
Yeah, I've communicated with all kinds of animals, but in terms of just different from soul to soul, whether they're a dog or a cat or a, Like three dogs could be very different because they're different. They're just different beings. So their vibration, their frequency, their talents, their wisdom, their everything is going to be their own.
How
Does that answer your
do
question?
you gave a lot of information,
Yeah.
and that's
So people
what
come to me for lots of different reasons.
yeah,
Like if
okay.
there's a behavioral issue or a physical, like a physical condition
Really?
or emotional, lots of animals have anxiety and different types of things. Sometimes if the animal gets lost, I get a lot of phone calls about that. Or if an animal has crossed over and there's some closure messages that are needed for that also can be really healing. So those are kind of the reasons that people, I think, mostly reach out to me. And what they end up getting can be way more than that.
What do they get?
Well, they just get to connect to their animal in such a way I think most people don't expect. I think people go into it not really knowing what it's going to be, right? And maybe they're curious and they think they're going there because their cat pees on the carpet, but then this whole thing happens and that ends up healing as well. But all this other stuff ends up coming up about for that, for really heal to heal them, because this is the animals really serve us in this way where they can do a behavior or they're just guiding us to what we need to heal as well. So lots of times, like for example, my dog will go running after someone, and really I'm like, why is he misbehaving and doing that? And then I end up connecting to the person. It's totally someone I need to connect to. Or, there's some like synchronicity about it where I'm like, oh, he was being good. He had his purpose. He knew it. He was connected to his guides and following his path and what he needed to do to help me.
When you are working with an animal, a dog or a cat or a domestic animal, when you're working with them, do you tell them or suggest to them to do certain things? Do you give them instruction or teach them?
The animals, yeah,
Yes.
and the humans.
And the humans too. So, so you use a psychic, intuitive, spiritual connection with the animals. Is it more, do you speak to them as well verbally, or is it just on that spiritual, intuitive, psychic channel?
Well, I usually guide into connecting also through the verbal way on you kind of do them both. So sometimes I'll teach the humans and go through that process so they know that actually making that connection on the spiritual level is possible for everybody. There's this technique called the say hello technique where you just actually talk and address the soul on the soul level. And I've used this for so many things, including people.
Yes.
I remember one night I was having a lot of trouble at this job I was at, and there was my boss, and da 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 was happening. And I just said, "Dear the soul of my boss." And I went through this whole thing and told her all this stuff. And then I was like, okay. And I did a little bit of chanting. The next morning I woke up, I walked in, I was kind of like, I'm gonna tell my boss all these things, which I had already told her on the soul level the night before. She walks right up to me and is like, I need to talk to you. And then she basically told me all the things I had told her the night before. And she said, it just dawned on me last night that da 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 da, and you probably feel da 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 da. And I said, yes,
Wow,
I
that's
do.
fabulous.
Yeah.
So, if someone has a problem with their animal peeing on the carpet, how do you handle that? Or is that more specific than the concepts that you work with?
No, that's
No?
about no.
No?
Yeah, well, first I would just connect to the animal, and I connect to my guides too, right? And depending on the circumstances, I'm guided. But basically what would happen is we would connect to the animal and ask them what the root cause is and why they're doing that. And then they would tell us. For example, my dog was being babysat and he started pooping in her house, which he didn't ever do. So she called me, and so I asked him why, and he told me, well, it's an animal thing. There's new dogs in the house now, and they're taking me out to go to the bathroom by myself. So I haven't got to do the animal thing where we go to the bathroom together. So I have to keep reasserting my
Oh, yeah.
territory. And I was like, wow, okay. I didn't know this. So I called her back and I said, are there new animals in the house? And she said, yeah. And I said, are you taking Ping to go outside by himself? And she said, yeah. And I said, just take him out with one of the other dogs and you should be fine. And she did, and it was fine.
What when so that's
That's
just
amazing because I would have
yes.
never thought of that.
No, well, yeah. I've noticed with older dogs, and I've had a few that got old. And my dog Tessa, she just turned 13, and one of the things that she does that a lot of older dogs do, when she's on the leash, she acts like she's a poor old sick dog, just walking behind everybody and, dragging her feet behind. And then let her off the leash and she runs around like a puppy. So why do they do that? Because I've seen that in lots of older dogs. Why do they do that?
Well, we would have to do a communication and see. Off the top of my head, I don't. Yeah. So, for her, I'm getting it has to do with freedom.
Oh yes, I could. I know
Which,
she.
yeah. So, the other part is you do the communication and then they let you know why. And sometimes it's easy, like it was with that. With my dog and pooping, and sometimes there's other stuff that could be happening. There's could be messages and information in their field that need to be transformed that's connected to why she feels that lower vibration when she has a leash on, and why older dogs feel that way. I've actually never done that communication, but we could. And sometimes that's the other aspect of what I do as a practitioner is offer them the blessings and the transmission so that it can raise that frequency, that vibrational field, the information of whatever's connected to that behavior or that, could be from a past life when she was enslaved. Like we have no idea what could be activated for her in at that time. Now, it may not even be her whole life. It could just be something that gets activated then because it's ready to heal and transform. So that's the other level of where I can step in and offer the transformation, the upliftment of that vibrational field around whatever that is, so that that can be released and healed. And that's what's really amazing when you see that start to transform. It's like, it's mind-blowing.
How do animals feel about completing their life, about dying? How do they handle that, or what do they think about it?
Well, this is an interesting subject. It's been coming up a lot. And I think it's one of the jobs that I have. One of the reasons I'm here to share that there's different ways, we're creating new ways for our dogs to complete that transformation. Some of them are really excited too because they've lived a really good life, they've gotten a lot of virtue, they've been able to serve really beautifully, they're very comfortable, they're like ready for their next embodiment. They know that like this put them ahead a little bit, right? Sometimes when they go to transition, they can be in the spiritual and the physical world. They start to kind of be in and out. And I think humans might go through this a little bit too. That's why older dogs and animals, sometimes I specifically see it in dogs, start to get like kind of confused mentally, or they start to pant and have a little anxiety because we don't know what they're actually seeing on the soul level. And not all of it is pleasant because they start to, their lessons are coming to the end of their life. So stuff starts to come up for them.
Do they know it?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yes.
sometimes it's confusing, and it helps for us to tell them what's going on and to offer some blessings and protection for them, so that then they understand, okay, this is what's happening. And now the other thing that I was guided to do last week with a dog was connect them to their guides and they're the ones that will be guiding them, so that they could actually have that connection. And then when they start to get confused, they connect. Where maybe before they didn't know how to do that, or they didn't know that that was available. So then they can go through that process a little bit differently and actually be a little more clued into what's happening and not just be really confused, right? So I think, there's ways to help them to cross over, and if they can naturally do it, that's spiritually really, really good for them. And I think it's really, really good for us. I also don't have any judgment around it, because we euthanize our pets. That's a lot of just kind of the go-to these days, because we don't want to watch them suffer, or it's too much for us to handle, right? We're suffering so much because we're seeing them die, and it's just too much to watch them suffer, which I totally get. It's horrible. But it is a part of their process in what they're doing.
So by euthanizing them, is that interrupting their life sooner than what they needed?
Well, that's the trouble a lot of people have afterwards, is there's almost this like playing God syndrome, where later then all the guilt comes in because they think, well, maybe I didn't need to do that. Or I've done some readings where the animals actually have made a contract with the human to do that for them. So that's a little different. It's just really case by case, to be honest. But I think that what happens when they can transition on their own is, I don't know what way to say it, except for like they start to burn off their karma. It's good to transition on your own.
Yes.
Even if it's suffering and it's not so fun, it's a way that we get to our next life. And what I would like to create for more animals is more of that divine space for them to do in it, so they don't feel scared, so they are not in pain, through the communication and the blessings and the different techniques that I have to help them make that a little easier for everybody, and actually make it this super sacred, amazing experience, which it can be. But it's hard because we don't know what else to do for them, and we don't want to just sit and watch them suffer. So I feel like that's part of my t task, if you will, is to start learning more about this spiritually and actually facilitate a more peaceful, calm, special, sacred crossing over that you can experience together. Because actually, that is a very special experience to have with someone.
Any live being.
It's just like seeing someone be born.
Yes.
It's very sacred. So I think that's an opportunity that I would like to see more animals get to have. And I don't think that's just not really what we're set up for right now. And it's hard for people to know what to do because they don't know what's available. This is, I feel like this is kind of a new way of
We're
doing things.
programmed when our animal gets old and sick, we put them to sleep and we're being kind and loving owners. And I've never had one of my animals, well, one dog got killed, but I've never had any of my animals, cats, dogs, just die, except for Tilly, and she got hit by a car. This is a totally new concept for me.
Yeah, it will be
It's
for most
amazing.
people.
Yeah.
So I feel like, I've started helping people with this and animals, and I'm sure there's other people doing this too. And yeah, it's really amazing. So even if the decision does get to euthanize them, the work we can do up to that time can still change that whole experience, and the actual experience
Wow.
of what they're doing on the soul level in terms of crossing over into their next phase. It's really profound. It's almost, I'm not, I almost don't have words to talk about it, because it's been really profound, and it touches people's hearts so deeply, because we just don't know that that's possible in that way until we experience it. So yeah, I think it's important to hold that space, and not to say that anybody's doing anything wrong. It's just maybe there's new ways to start to do some things as we continue on this connection with our animal companions and what they're actually bringing to us, and that they have this journey too, just like we do. And
This is
yeah.
fabulous. This is just amazing stuff. Catherine, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
You're going to have to come back and talk more, because we just
Sure.
scratched the surface, and this has really been a fabulous, fabulous conversation. How do people get in touch with you? Just if you wanted to say some things, how would
Yeah, you, well, I would invite you to check out some of my resources on YouTube. I have lots
Yep.
of free resources. I do the pet healing show once a week. I do Forgiveness Fridays to help our pets heal and transform, and also any guilt that you have from, saying goodbye to a pet. You can check me out, Soul Light Pet Services with Catherine O'Shea on YouTube. You can also check out my website, soullightpetservices.org. On Instagram, I'm at Soul Light Pet Services or at Soul Light Pet, I think.
And we also have a lot of that information that we will be
Perfect.
posting as well while you sent it to us. So we will be posting it as well. Thank you. What a wonderful, wonderful
Oh, thank
conversation.
you. Thank you so much.
Just as we're starting the main event tonight, my special guest is my friend Lindsay Sharman, all the way in Denver, Colorado. Lindsay, how wonderful to see you on my side of the crystal ball. Good evening. You're one of the most interesting and fascinating people that I've met since I've been doing this show. You do so many things. How would you describe yourself?
It's really hard, actually. And you've helped me narrow it down to calling myself a mystic teacher and healer, because that is, it encapsulates all of the things I do. And there are very many things I do. When people ask me, what do you do? What do you do for a living? Or what do you do? I'm like, I like, sit down. Let me tell you all the things, because there's a lot of them.
Thinking about being mystic, but then teacher, you've been a teacher for a long time, and you've also been a traditional teacher.
Yes, I actually taught for 14 years as a profession. And I've taught in rural areas, urban areas, internationally, locally in the States, and poverty and just obscene wealth all through the spectrum of every type of student from 6 years old to 60 years old, everything in between, of colleges, universities, everywhere. I've taught in every single setting.
Did you teach things when you were a kid? Like we were just talking briefly, and you said before we started recording, and you said you had your first real job getting paid at 14. So, did you do healing things when you were a kid?
I think I've only ever done things that I felt would help other people, and hopefully heal them in whatever ways I could. Although it's not always easy to get paid for that. So I definitely think doing things like dishwashing and these types of things, it's not the job itself that necessarily had that
Sure.
going for it, but I would always find ways to try to. For example, when I was a checker at a grocery store for a while, my goal and every single interaction was to just make the person smile or have some
Wow.
sort of a positive interaction with me. And it's harder than you think. Most people are very resistant to smiling. They're like, they want to be angry, and they want to be
Sure.
angry at you, or at least kind of disconnected. So to get that to happen, if I got it to happen like 1 out of 10 times, I consider that day a success. So I never really was just doing the job. I was always trying to do what I could to make people's lives a little bit better.
When did the mystic part start happening?
The more I think about it,
yes,
it was never not happening.
So it was always happening. So tell me about your mystic experiences or thinking. How do you recognize that you're being mystic or amystic?
I mean, I was just talking about this with someone else, and I was saying, you know, when I was a kid, I really wandered around our 5-acre little farm. It was a dilapidated farm. We were definitely living in poverty, but we had space and it was fun to be outside. And I would wander around talking to trees and flowers and bushes and the sky and clouds and whatever random things felt like they were talking to me. And I was like learning stuff. And I look back and I'm like, oh, I was talking to intelligences. I was interacting with intelligences. I just didn't know that that was what I was doing. I just thought I was talking to myself and wandering.
When you say intelligences, what do you mean by that?
Well, now I look at it that everything has an intelligence. I mean, literally everything has a soul and an intelligence. Some are easier to interact with. Some are
like trees.
Trees, for sure. Yeah, I talk to trees.
Do you?
On purpose. Yeah, I always did. I just didn't. It took me a while to notice that that's what was happening.
Do they speak back?
Yes.
I'm not being a jerk on this, but what do they say?
Well, they'll say all kinds of things.
Okay.
It depends on what you're talking to them about. But mostly, if there was like a base message of that most trees are saying most of the time, it would be, I love you.
Wow. Well, you see, I believe that I feel energy from plants, and I feel energy from bugs, and I feel an awareness, and I can sense a personality with plants, and I have a few plants that I've had with me for like 35 years. Yeah, you too?
Yeah. I have a plant right now. I call him Phil, boringly. He's a philodendron, if you couldn't guess. And I saved him. My friend got him, actually, and he was almost dead. Everything is a he to me. It really has nothing to do with gender. It's just a thing I do. But he had like one tiny fraction of a part of a stem that was green and everything else was brown.
Wow.
And my friend was like, I think he's dead. And I'm like, he's not. He has a tiny bit of green. And she's like, if you think you can save him, take him. I took him. I gave him water. I asked him, what do you want? And he said, music. And I said, oh, okay, what kind of music? And he said, happy music. And so I played him Bob Marley all day long, every day, in the sunlight, in the sunshine. He had a little window and water and Bob Marley, and he shot up all these green shoots and they stuck straight into the sky and all his leaves were straight up. It's the happiest plant I've ever seen. And that was nearly 20 years ago. Yeah.
So now you're full time in the, what would you call the field that you're in? Because you do lots of things. My father never could imagine that what I do is a job. And he often told me that I was the only person he knew that never had a job. But I didn't like that very much. Now, you've given up having a job. And you're doing something different now.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yes.
Well, I was teaching for so long, and for many years I was really getting the message in every single possible way, mentally, physically, from other people, like all over, that I shouldn't be a teacher anymore. And it's not because I'm a fantastic teacher. My students and parents love me and I do a great job, but the system is very difficult. And it was killing me, and I give too much and I love too much. And I have a hard time, like many teachers, having boundaries over how much time and how much love I give. And so it was really bad for me, especially as a very empathic, caring, spirit-centered person. So I kept, so I finally went to the woods one day, which is, again, where I can be really deeply in connection with a lot of entities and energies that are positive. And I went to a waterfall, which is another energy I really like to connect to. And I just asked, you know, am I really supposed to leave teaching? Because this is my life's purpose. Like my soul tells me that I teach and that's what I do. I heal people through teaching and through connecting with them on that direct level and person to person. And, you know, and I do a lot of energy work when I'm teaching in the most appropriate way possible. And so how can I leave
Can I just interject? What is an appropriate way to use healing energy?
Well, you can't force it on someone, and well, it has to be consensual, just like any interaction, right?
Yes, of course. Oh, okay.
So I can't just go into a room and start projecting, like, you're going to experience this now, or you're going to feel this now, but I can go into a room and just say, love, just like the trees.
Okay.
Love. I love you.
Okay. All right.
Which is more than most humans get, sadly. Not many humans are walking around projecting I love you. Very few, in fact. And most children have not had very many adults in their lives who just love them, which is sad. And that was part of why I love teaching so much, because I was one of the few adults in their lives that just loved them and also held them to high standards and also taught them, but beyond and above and around all that, just loved them.
How did you come to put that in your MO? Just loving them. Like were you 10? Were you 14? Were you 30? How did you get there?
Yeah.
That's really special.
Thank you. It's concentric, you know, and it comes back again and again, but at its core, I was a really traumatized, you know, abused and neglected, and you know, so I needed that desperately as a child. And not to say that my parents didn't love me. They did. They did the best they could, but they were, you know, traumatized and messed up and doing the best they could too. And we just, none of us had enough love. And so I was like, well, if there's one thing people need, it's love. That feeds every other pursuit in our life, every other passion in our life, every other aspect of our physical health, our mental health, all of it is if we're just loved, which doesn't mean that you know, sometimes loving someone, in fact, very, very frequently, most often loving someone comes with really profoundly steep or stern boundaries. And children especially need that, you know, for you to say, I love you indefinitely. There's nothing you can do to make me not love you. And you may not treat me like this. Or you may not treat yourself like this. Or you may not treat my objects like this. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And the combo of that is also exceptionally rare for children. It's usually they either get really permissive people who believe that loving them is giving them everything they think that they need and that they want, or people who just do the strict or just do the rejection. And people who both love and have good boundaries are not very common.
In one of the podcasts or earlier podcasts in What Would Robert Say, I talked about hating the sin, loving the sinner, and how to do that, so I'm understanding, but it took me a lot of years, a lot more years than it took you to get to it. You know, so from a young age, you were consciously aware that you were just giving out love.
I wasn't always very good at it. But I knew that it was the key, because it took me a while to love myself. And
oh,
I think
yes.
That's also the biggest struggle that most of us have.
Yes.
It was way easier for me to love plants and clouds and animals and other people. And then loving myself was like, oh no, I couldn't love her. Look at what she's done. She's really messed up. But when I got to that point, I mean, that's when things really transformed. And actually that coincides with my ability to finally leave teaching, which really was its own personal success and achievement. Because when it came down to it, the reason I had stayed so long was guilt. I felt guilty. If I left, who would love these kids? Who would do this? Because no one else was doing it. And I had to finally love myself more than, as much as
yes.
I loved them.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask. Well, a slightly different one is I was going to ask, you know, you're really good at the giving part of love. My question was, so how are you at the receiving part?
I get better and better all the time.
That's a really good thing to get better and better at.
Yes.
So, you have a podcast.
Yes.
What? Tell me about your podcast. I was on your podcast, but yeah. but and I saw Catherine on your podcast. But what's your podcast about?
It's so eclectic. It's really. You know, my goal in doing Rogue Ways is to empower people to understand that none of us is special and all of us are special, and that anybody, any one of us can do anything. Because I think we have this tendency to look at people, especially people on shows, and think, wow, that person's really get, they really get it, or they've really gotten there. They're sure. really doing anything.
Yeah.
They are so much different than me. And so my goal is to have people share their life experiences and really, so we can all see like, yeah, even these people you put up on a pedestal, especially them, they sure. were down where you think that you're at or where you were at also. And, you know, to really understand that all of us are capable. And then at the same time, have absolutely no limits on what we talk about and how we talk about it. So I explore every single topic that could possibly exist in the realm of humanity, consciousness, community, magic. I did an episode on whales. Like,
oh, did you?
Yeah, I just do anything. And really, it's like whatever, whoever happens to come on, whatever they're really into, that's what we end up talking about. And then on the episodes where it's just me, it's whatever I've been thinking about lately, which tonight is the divine masculine. So
I like the sound of that. What? Tell me about what is the divine masculine?
It's this side of all of us, really, you know, maybe historically and more often in actual biological males. But everybody has the yin and the yang, the divine
of course,
masculine,
of course.
The divine feminine. And, you know, there's women who are more divine masculine than some men, and there's men that are more divine
oh,
feminine
absolutely.
Than some, right? So,
yep.
But in essence, it's the part of us that's active, outward, constructive, building, creating, sometimes destroying, especially in like the warrior personification of the divine masculine. Yeah, so that's the crux of it.
What type of things will you be talking about?
I really
the divine masculine. Yes. What will you be talking? What will you be saying about the divine masculine? Like,
well, I've really felt for a handful of years that it's been sad to watch how men seem to be attacked and targeted. Masculinity seems to be attacked and targeted. And while it's good to recognize how femininity and women have been attacked and targeted for thousands of years, it is not good to then become the abusers and put down the masculine. And so I feel sad seeing how emasculated many men feel and how media seems to emasculate men over and over again. All of our commercials are like the dumb, stupid man.
Yeah. Like, or men seem stupid to begin with, whether they're the dumb, stupid dad or the commercials are like that.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah. Okay.
They're demeaning.
Right. And what's good about men? Well, according to many sources of media for many years now, nothing right. is. Nothing yeah. is good. And what we should be doing is getting rid of masculinity. And, you know, we talk about right. toxic masculinity,
right.
toxic, everywhere. I'm like,
well, that'll get it. That'll bring it out.
Exactly. And we ignore, there's toxic femininity, and it's rampant too. They're both rampant because
absolutely.
Toxicity is rampant,
absolutely.
Not because it's feminine or masculine. So I'm doing a celebration of masculinity tonight, and I'm just reminding anyone who didn't know that men are fantastic and beautiful, and they hold up half the sky just like women do, and we can all celebrate the good things about men.
Is that Rogue Ways?
Yeah, that'll be Rogue Ways tonight. Tonight's episode on Rogue Ways is called Divine Masculine, A Celebration and Recall.
So do you counsel people?
I do. I call it guidance.
Okay, coach or guidance?
Guidance sessions is what I offer people. And basically people can bring anything they want to that. It tends to be experiences they may have had that are mystical that they don't necessarily understand what it means or why it's happening. And then sometimes it's just, you know, a problem like we all have. We struggle with various things and how to think about it or how to move forward with it. And I have many tools that I use during guidance sessions. And one of them might be like tarot, for example. We might use some tarot.
What decks do you use, or do you have more than one deck?
I have one deck, and I've had one deck since I was 14.
Which one?
It's the Handel deck.
Okay, I don't know that one. I have the Rider pack, but
yeah.
But I don't. I just use it to, you know, answer questions. You know.
Yeah.
For me, right? Because, you do counseling one-on-one like coaching.
Yes.
And do you work with trauma as well? People that are.
I do. I essentially I've been guided and trained by my guides and my entities and energies that I work with to offer what I call a spiritual healing ceremony. And 100% of the time it deals with trauma. and you know, sometimes it looks like what in many cultures is called a soul retrieval. And oftentimes it also looks like what most people would call like accessing the Akashic records and what lots of people might describe as past life recall. And so those things can happen during it, but I don't, if I were going to pretend like I knew ahead of time what was going to happen, I would call it an Akashic reading or a soul mm-hmm. retrieval, but I don't. I just go into ceremonial space and then I see what happens.
In my work, I tend to be more on the practical side than the esoteric side. I'm learning so much about the esoteric stuff these days. In my work, I avoid dealing with spiritual matters or spirits or things like that. My focus is just where they are in that moment rather than it on a spiritual level. So I'm learning a whole lot about how people label what they do. It's been really fascinating for me.
It's hard because I wasn't trained in a specific tradition, although I was trained by people from many traditions. Sure. And so I draw from all of them. And so I don't have words sometimes. So that's why you heard me just saying, it looks like this and that. But right. I'll say when I worked with you and you did a reading for me, it definitely helped me continue some healing processes and brought me great closure, especially sure. to some of my own traumas and insecurities. So I think what you do does work on a spiritual level. I don't know what, but like you said, we all have such different words and such different ways
of describing stuff. One of the things that I've been noticing is that people that do this kind of work, just about every one of us have been deeply traumatized.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that. Yeah, and the many people I've interviewed that do similar, at least in this realm, whatever this realm of work sure. is, 100% of them.
Why do you think it's like that? Why do you think that people that do this kind of healing spiritual work, psychic work, why do you think we start off being traumatized?
I think it's something like if we had no impetus, we would just sit around feeling happy and sit around feeling content. And,
okay.
and then something happens that really shakes everything up. And, you know, in the tarot, that's like the tower card, right?
Right.
Here it comes, like everything's right. going to be shaken up.
Right.
What's going to be left afterwards? And sure. each time you really start to understand what is at the core and what is at the essence, what's the foundation, that's the thing that's never actually going anywhere. And now you understand how important it is because you experienced how that literally sure. came with you through all the turmoil right. and how you still had that when you were done shedding everything else. I think that's a part of it. It's its own, you know, darkness, trauma, and these things have a tendency
What
to.
I was asking is, why do you think people like us that do this work all like it appears to be a prerequisite of getting that job? Why do
Yeah,
you think so?
I really think it forces you to get to pare
Yeah.
yourself down to and see what is real and what is
Okay.
not, and what is
Okay.
important and what is not. Because I don't think you'd have the motivation to go digging that deep otherwise.
People that have trauma and how we deal with it. Some of us become empathic and others become narcissistic. And it is a conscious choice. It is a conscious choice. There's somewhere in everyone's life, whether they're a narcissist or an empath, there's something that would cause them to make it a conscious choice and literally take a step in that direction.
That's a really, yeah. Because there's people who I know who have even verbalized the sort of choice to, as they describe it, close the door. So whether
Yes.
you're talking about psychic phenomenon,
Absolutely.
input, or
That's right.
whatever, and they're like, I don't want to, I'll shut that door. And
Right.
those people tend to go towards narcissism,
Right. That's right.
which is
I
not better.
see it. What how I was seeing it, or how I described it for me, was standing at the edge of a precipice, and stepping off the precipice into darkness. That's how I saw it. And that's why I didn't take the step. But it is a conscious choice.
Yeah. I don't know. I've just always, like I said, had this really deep understanding that I'm surrounded by really loving energy, whatever that is. People call it all kinds of things, like God, source,
Sure.
angels. I don't even care. It doesn't matter, right?
Do you believe in angels?
I believe in every single possible thing. I think it is all about your perspective. You know, I don't think it matters. It doesn't matter to me what words are very cheap and poor descriptors of what actually is going on. But you know, if people are more comfortable with the word angels, then I'll call it angel, and if they're more comfortable with something else, I'll call it something else.
I'm thinking you might have a book or two that you've either written or writing or thinking about doing. I think all three.
All three, yeah.
So tell me about your books and your writing.
I have my first book was A Gypsy on the Rez, which is my very irreverent description of my time teaching on a Native American reservation. And it's beautiful and amazing, and you know, it's a fun book to read. It's very short little snippets, and it's not even a very long book altogether. So, and then I dove accidentally into fiction writing, which I never, ever, ever thought I would do. I'd always written poetry and articles, you know, is basically what I wrote most of my life. And then I suddenly wrote a novel. And I finally have accepted the fact that whatever people call channeling is what I did, and that's what that book is. That's what came through. But I really hated that word for so long that I didn't call it that. I was like, it was inspired, or it was like whatever, I'm over it. I channeled this book. And you know, there's things in it, for example, that I had.
Could I? So, when you were channeling, and were you typing like on your computer?
Yes,
All right. So,
unfortunately.
when your fingers were moving and you were thinking, was there emotion in that, or was it you just following a line or an energy? Because that'll determine whether you were feeling it or whether it was really you or whether you were channeling it.
I would see the scenes in my head and understand the conceptual framework in which that scene was happening, and I
Yes.
would just start typing.
So you didn't actually think of the words, you were just feeling the color red.
Well,
Or red.
it's hard to describe though, because if I got a word wrong or I had like something that wasn't supposed to happen, it was like, stop, 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 erase that, erase that. And if I didn't, it would like scream at me until I did. And I'm like, okay, okay, like that's apparently not right. And as I was doing this, also, I would get really angry, for example, because I would be like, why are they doing this? Like, I don't want this character to do this. Like, I would write this very differently.
Oh, okay. Okay. I just, people that don't do this kind of work are interested or find what you just talked about quite fascinating. That's why I interrupted you to ask you that question, right? Because the non-practitioners don't understand it or even think about it.
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't. So one night I just was sitting there and I was like, it'd be fun to read a book like blank. And then three books appeared in my head and I saw all three of them and I understood what was going to happen generally in each. And I was like, whoa. And then it was like gone. And I was like, what was that? And I scribbled it out. I still have the page of my like, notes on these three books. And then I was like, I don't know how to write books. This is why I've never written fiction, because it seems impossible to me to have a whole universe in your head and know all the things that are going to happen. Well, it turned out I didn't have to know anything that was going to happen, because I would just sit down and I would sit for long enough and I would get into a sort of meditative state, and then I would just start receiving the images and the ideas, and then I would just go about writing. And like I said, if I did it wrong, I would be yelled at until I changed it. And things started happening where, for example, beings would show up in the story and I would be writing about them, and I would have this very strong feeling like, this is a real being, like this isn't just in a story, this is like an actual energy or something. And you know, I knew all the, like,
they look different than human.
Yes, it was definitely a spiritual being. And I knew all the characteristics. I knew that it had to do with, you know, helping the wheel of time and fate turn and change. And I knew that it was very masculine. I knew that it was wild, and it had this wild energy and this foresty thing and these horns. And it was like,
I was thinking of like that long furry type body as well.
I had like a wolf fur on. And then I went and I was randomly doing something, and this god, this Celtic god Cernunnos, popped up, and I was like, that's that thing, that's the guy. And I was reading the description and it was all the same exact things, and I was like, how did I know that? I didn't know that. And so things like that happened a lot through writing those books, where I would write about something and then I would find out that it was real in real life. And And so I was like, okay, well, something really weird is going on here, because, you know, so slowly I had to start accepting that this was coming from somewhere else to me.
In your counseling, do you see the future, forecast or project the future?
Sometimes, but I am very wary of it, because I don't trust that it's 100% going to be that way.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, well,
of course. I like to make open-ended statements as well, give information, but so that the other person can interpret it their way.
That's a good way. I know I've learned by now that I have to share whatever comes to me. That's my job.
Yes.
And I also try to do that as responsibly as possible.
I understand that one too. Lindsay, I can't believe how quickly the time has gone by. This has been a fabulous conversation. Because it went by so fast, it means you have to come back and do it again sometime. And
you are one of my favorite people to spend time with, so I will be.
Thank you. So how do people find you?
If they go to rogueways.org, they can find everything that I do.
R-O-G-U-E?
Yes.
Rogue Ways, and they can just Google it, go to Facebook, all that.
Yes, and it's ways like pathways, not waves like the ocean waves.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody, I just don't know where the time has gone. It's gone so fast. What a fabulous show. I'd like to thank my guest tonight, Catherine O'Shea, animal communicator extraordinaire, intuitive, and channeler. Thank you, Catherine. What a fabulous, interesting talk you gave us. I'd also like to thank Lindsay Sharman, host of podcast Rogue Ways, teacher. Mystic teacher, healer, and channeler. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge and experience. By the way, just before I'm leaving, I have a request. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like, comment, and subscribe to our channel. And by the way, if you like, make a comment. That adds so much to our ratings. And of course, subscriptions are always complimentary. If you're looking for, and by the way, you can find us on Apple and Spotify and pretty much anywhere else that you get your podcasts. If you would like to find me, by the way, I'm still doing readings and still doing counseling. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Yep. I'm doing a TikTok thing. And so check that one out. And you can always find me on my website, www.robertlindseymilne.com. Well, that's it for tonight. Just before I say adios, please remember, be good, be safe, and above all, always be kind. Good night, everybody.